Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkaran. More about me at rajbalkaran.com. More importantly, today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Radha Raghunathan. She is an author, critic, an independent researcher. She's also the director and general editor of the Adyar Library and Research Center. We'll be speaking about a fascinating translation work of hers, In the Wisdom Chariot. Radha, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So this work of yours, could you tell us a bit about the Wisdom Chariot, the Jnana Ratnam? What is this work in its original?
Jnana Ratnam translates as the Wisdom Chariot. John Bunyan has translated as the Celestial Chariot, but basically we take it as the Wisdom Chariot. It is a fantasy novella by the Tamil poet, writer, Subramanya, Mahakavi Subramanya Bharatiya. And then in this, he takes, the protagonist takes a fantasy ride to different worlds. And he relates his experiences in those worlds. This is the basic, the spread of the whole work. It's a small work, but it has a lot of layers woven into it, literary, mythological, philosophical, social aspects. All of them are interwoven very subtly and non-interferingly in this whole work.
Can you say a word about the novelty of this genre, of this novella? Say a word about whether or not this is new, other works like this in Tamil literature.
It was Subramanya Bharathiyar who was the first one to introduce this genre of the novella. That is the Roman Aklef style of writing short novels in Tamil. And it was known only to the Western readers until then. And he was the first one to introduce it to the Indian audience, especially in Tamil. So this is the uniqueness of Bharathiyar, because he was a multifaceted personality who was very widely read, both in the Indian literature as well as the Western literature. And he was able to bring the Western thoughts into his Indian writings.
Before we dive into some of the content, could you say a bit about the reception of his novel?
Bharathiyar is widely read, well known. And he was a patriot and a very fiery poet, a fiery writer who was welcomed by all. And even today, he was most quoted by all because he set the tone for the modern literature in Tamil. The modern style of writing in Tamil literature. So he is, it's not as if people don't know about Bharathiyar, but this particular work of Jnana Ratnam is not as much well read or not as widely read as his other works are.
Do you know why that is? You mean in Tamil, it's not widely read. Do you know why that is?
I think it's because there are too many subtleties to be understood in this novel, though it is very enjoyable. Once people read it, then they will start enjoying the fantasy portion, the romantic, the romance of the whole novel. But they may miss out on what he is trying to convey through his whole, the whole romantic piece.
So what do you feel he's trying to convey? What do you think, what do you feel the central, it's obviously a complex work with lots of strands, but what do you feel the central thrust of this work is?
For the layperson, it is an enjoyable ride into a fantasy ride to different worlds and different experiences. But to the scholars, they can go on unearthing so many subtleties, which you know brings out, and a literator would see the beauty of the figures of speech or the way he handles concepts in the novel. A philosopher like me would go very deep into the thoughts of philosophy. A social reformer would look at the social reforms that he's hinting at. So there are two, it is something, you know, where everybody can have a piece of the cake.
What sort of, would you say there's an influence of religious or Indic Hindu ideas in the novel?
No, Bharatiya was an omnist. So even in this novel, he brings out aspects, primarily of Hinduism, primarily of the Indian society. He was more rooted with the Indian culture and the Tamil culture. So culturally, he is trying to present the picture for people to relate to easily. But under that, he brings the sense, and in some places, he even makes mention of Jesus as a prophet, as one who was known for his forbearance. So it is okay. Philosophically, yes, we can go on talking about, yes, he is talking about Hinduism, he is talking about Vedanta, he is talking about our customs, but there is some universal thread also, which is stringing through the whole piece.
So then you'd say in its original, it's not particularly for a religious or pious audience. Would you say that it's intended to be literature? Primarily,
yes, it is. It can be classed as literature, or you can class it as a social piece. But there is something for everybody in it, universally. And when I say universally, relevant to all times, not just to the times that he wrote it. He wrote it at a time when India was struggling for its freedom, for its independence, and he was very vociferous in his demand for freedom. And that also echoes here and there in this novel. But what he said then is relevant even today when we look at so many struggles that are going on in the world.
Could you tell us a little bit about... I'll ask that next. What are some of your favorite parts of the story? Either as a reader or, you obviously fell in love with the story before you decided to translate it. So what speaks most to you? What did you most love about this tale, this novella?
It is the beauty of the language, which is at once simple, but very profound also, with a profound thought being conveyed through very simple sentences, very simple style. And there is so much of... everything comes to my mind when I read, portions in it. Keats comes to mind. Then there is, Milton that comes to mind. And then there is, the politics of India, the political history of India that comes to mind. There's also something, which I could relate to, because at the very beginning, he says, how nice it would be if I had a reading, the Upanishad or Shakuntalam and go all the way to Adyar and return. Now see, everything there relates to me. The very opening, was something which I could connect to. The thing, talking about the Upanishads, which is, is my, my passion. And another thing is talking about going to Adyar, which is, the Adyar library and the research center and everything. And so it triggers off a lot of memories. Every word in it triggers off something that everybody could really connect to. So that, you know, making connection is something which is unique about Bharatiya. And second thing is, it's not just the language, but he tries to convey something much more to each person, saying that he is actually talking about, in this whole thing, the taming of the mind, which is very, very subtly mentioned, subtly conveyed, taming of the mind. And in one place, he just says, there is a voice that tells him, a celestial voice that tells him, it's not possible for you to destroy your mind. And if you have to enter into this world of truth, you have to leave your mind behind and come here. So everything takes a personality, as a personality of its own in this. And that is something which really appealed to me.
What was your process like translating text? Tell us a bit about that process.
This particular text, initially, I just had to understand what exactly he was trying to say. Initially, I just took it at the face value, just reading. And, you know, but the more I went into it, the more messages that were hidden in it were surfing up. And so I had to really attune myself to that underlying message while this translation had to be done. So there, what I did was to go for a word-for-word translation to remain faithful to the text. Generally, I come across another translation much after my writing this translation. I came across another translation, which was written many years ago by one Professor Mahadevan, and it was published by the Textbook Corporation of Tamil Nadu. And there I found that it was more, he has resorted to paraphrasing in many places rather than actually, you know, so there were passages that seemed to have been left out in the translation. But I thought I should not leave out anything. And so the challenge was to keep the cultural sensibilities also intact while I was translating, which is difficult, you know, from one language to another, because there are cultural differences also between when we translate from one to another.
I'm intrigued, actually. Why did your predecessor, your translation predecessor, why were certain passages omitted? It's not a particularly lengthy work. It's manageable. So why were entire passages not translated?
I don't know why it was done so by that professor. But one thing that I come across in many of these translations are people tend to just take the general sense and not go into the particular words. So there was this American linguist Eugene Nida, who has talked about what is this dynamic equivalence and formal equivalence. The dynamic equivalence is more of a sense to sense, sense for sense translation. And what I attempted is the word for word translation, which Nida terms as the formal equivalence. So I think that is what I have attempted, the formal equivalence in this translation of this work.
So then your translation is the only English translation which conveys word to word what the Tamil is saying. Would you agree?
Yes. Yes, I can say that very confidently about my work. And one more thing is the Professor Narayan Mahadevan's translation is obviously based on one very easily available edition, whereas I have managed to go into so many other Bharatiyar had published this work as a, he had started publishing it as a serial in the beginning in a journal, and then it stopped after a few episodes. But the prefaces and other descriptions he gives there are not repeated in the book. So I went through all that, put them together. So this book itself, this text itself, which I am presenting, would be a critically edited version of the text from so many sources that I could lay my hands on. And therefore the translation also is based on the critical edition of the text.
Fascinating. So in your view, Who might most benefit from this in terms of certainly lay people interested in literature, but in terms of fields of study, who might most benefit from looking at this translation?
First of all, people who don't know Tamil but would like to see it. And secondly, people who want to study Bharatiya, who want to know who this person is, they are certain to benefit. And almost all research scholars who want to get into the different facets of this, it offers enormous opportunities. There are too many aspects in it which can open out, you know, avenues for research and a voluminous book in itself. So I think, you know, too many people, and especially this translation is in the words of this Professor Indira Parthasarathy, who has given the foreword to this book. It will definitely benefit the international readers. And it will take Bharatiyar to the international arena is what Professor Indira Parthasarathy told me when he read the book, when he read my translation.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Excellent. Is this work that you hope to develop at some point, or is this a figure that you will continue to research on, or have your interests changed for the next project?
See, basically, I have been so far into very serious works on Vedanta. This is the first one I took up. This is the first fiction I have taken up for translation. And I took it up, you know, because it is the 100th death anniversary of Subramanya Bharatiyar. So it was my tribute to him. But what I have to complete, because I've already taken up a few projects on Vedanta related texts, so I would have to complete all of them, and I don't know if something comes my way as intense as this and as interesting as this, I may take up another fiction or poetry for translation. But most of the works that I'm already doing in Vedanta are all poetic. They're all in verse form, so poetic, or there could be even commentaries which I'm translating. So this also happens to have a lot of Vedanta in it, so it was interesting for me to go along with it and do the translation.
Was there anything else about the translation or the work itself that you hope we touch on today?
Yes. One thing is, I would like to touch upon my contribution in this work. The thing is, especially I was very, very conscious of the cultural differences, the cultural uniqueness of our country, India and the Tamilians, as well as how it is conveyed to a non-Tamilian or a non-Indian. So I had to be very careful about how it is taken, especially the words. And there are so many descriptions he gives to project our cultural and religious sentiments. For example, there are what are the different types of sports and pastimes, which are very unique to the Tamil culture and not known elsewhere. And there are also the religious sensibilities. And in one portion, there is an overlapping of the Hindu religion and the cultural Indian culture. For example, the Varnashrama Dharma, he handles it very, very carefully. And I think very sensibly also. If I may, what happens, I mean, in one place, he just goes to an ascetic, to a teacher, to a guru, and he wants to know, what is it to be a Brahmin? Now, that teacher starts explaining on the four Varnas. And then the guru says, see, I am a Brahmin, but I train my children according to the needs of the time, the needs of the situation. He chooses only one son in the Brahminical duties and the other sons towards a Kshatriya duty, to be a warrior or to go and to merchandise. He just says, it is necessary for a Brahmin to know all these dharmas and teach them, and you have to develop, produce such people as the society needs, as the needs arise. For example, it says, if there is a need for more Kshatriyas, then you teach all the Kshatriya texts to them. If there is a need for the Vaidika duties, then you teach this to them. So he says, this is what a Brahmin teacher should know. This is how he presents that. We should know everything. So it doesn't define, a person need not be a Brahmin all the time. He can be, become a Kshatriya also. And that is what I'm seeing now when, we are looking at the world situation in one of the countries which is, going through the aggression, where I come to know that even the civilians are carrying the rifles to protect their country. So this is the message that I say, it's a universal work that he has written.
Would you characterize him as progressive in some sense in his thinking?
He was very progressive for his times and even for today. How progressive until you? He was a Brahmin by birth. But I told you he was an Omnist. And what he did was he identified a non-Brahmin boy. I guess it could have been a Dalit boy. I don't know. Maybe a Haridu, whatever. Kanakalingam was the boy's name. And he performed the Upanayanam for that boy. He taught him all the Vedas and made him do the Vedic duties. When it came to women empowerment, he gave some kind of 10 commandments as to how the women should be treated, because in those days the women were always cloistered inside their houses. So, but there he was influenced by Sister Nivedita first, because he himself was like that. As a young man, when he went to study, he was also carried by the society of that time. But once after his meeting Sister Nivedita, she asked, haven't you brought your wife along? He said, no, we don't bring our women. He said, if half the country is going to remain indoors, how would you expect this country to progress and win its independence? That was the trigger. And then he went back. And his wife was always his muse in everything. His wife Chalamal was his muse. And so he was known to take his wife openly into the public places with his arms wrapped around her or holding her hands. And that was ridiculed by the traditionalists. But he was very progressive even then. So, and when his daughter, Tangamal, whenever the guests arrived at home, she was asked to bring water to wash their feet. That was not the dumb thing, that a girl comes out, a young girl comes out. And when it was time for her to get married, he wanted her to choose her match. But it was the elders and this one who said, no, let us find the match. And so he just relented. But he was that progressive. He was always progressive that way.
fascinating figure. Just for my curiosity, I don't know the subfield nearly as well, obviously. Is he well studied? Is he a fairly well studied figure?
He was. He himself had studied well, and he is well studied by all today, till today. And I think for a long time he will be studied by all.
Excellent. Okay, well.
Because he knew several languages, several Indian languages and foreign languages, and he wrote in Tamil, English, French, and other languages, not only Tamil, in so many Indian languages, Bengali and other languages also he has written.
Clearly, a special individual.
Yes, sir, but he didn't live too long. That's that is one more unique thing about him. And in a very short lifespan, he has really brought a huge revolution in Indian writing.
Reminds me of the Puranic tale of Mrikandu. He and his wife were looking for a child, and by appeasing Shiva said, well, you can have a child, but either one who lives short and is productive and wise, or one who lives long and is a dullard and a drunk.
Yes, yeah. That is true.
I suppose quality over quantity might apply even here. Thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
Yeah. Funny.
Thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks a lot. It was my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
It's a pleasure. For those of you listening, we've been speaking with Dr. Radha Raghunathan on her fantastic new English translation of an important work, the Gyanaratam, in the Wisdom Chariot. Soaring with Bharati in the Wisdom Chariot. Until next time, stay safe, stay sane, keep well, and keep reading Tamil literature. Take care.